Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Providing unbiased opinions on all things U football and basketball.
All right, welcome to this episode of the U Talk podcast. My name's Grant Bagby, joined by, like always, for the late week edition of U Talk by Joseph Silversquig, one of our writers at TornbySports.com. And today we're also joined by Batman Kenneth Scott, former youth wide receiver as of a year ago, now turned media member, writing for UteNation.com. And he's actually going to be with us all show. And we're going to go over, we're going to focus on the offense to start, really go into play calling, conservative play calling, how much we all like, to, all of us fans like to complain about it. And then we're going to start focusing on UCLA and the impact of Rosen, whether he's playing or not, which is, I mean, it's clearly in the air right now. But let's get started with some conservative play calling. Because, Joseph, I've told you plenty of times how much it annoys me, and specifically the point where post-game, Whittingham gets asked about it. Hey, why did you guys go so conservative? What happened? And then he says, you know what? Looking back at it, it's, you know, we probably shouldn't have, we shouldn't have done that. We probably should have opened up the playbook more. But yet every time conservative play calling seems to be an issue, every post game he seems to say the same thing, and every time it just continues on and on. I mean, it's literally the definition of insanity, according to Albert Einstein, who said you can't expect the same results by doing the same thing. Tell me where I'm wrong, Joseph.
Well, I don't think you're wrong. I think that Coach Witt should stop saying that he needs to change the conservative play calling in the second half, because he doesn't need to change it. He wins a ton of games that way. It's boring to watch. I'm sure Kenneth could tell us, probably pretty boring for him as a player. I mean, I'm looking at these games from 15. At Washington, there were 6 passes in the second half. Against Oregon State, there were 8. And you know, you got to know that, and you're just standing there waiting for everybody else knows it too. But it works. The Utes have led at the half by 8 or more points 16 times since they joined the Pac-12. They are 15-1 in those games, but they're 9-0 in games when they totally changed the way that they played, when they had a big change, more than 5% change in rushing and throwing. And not only do they win all their games, but they score about a touchdown more than their opponents do. When they don't change what they're doing, when they can keep roughly the same pass-to-run ratio, they actually get outscored by about 5 points on average in those games. And I get it. I mean, as a fan, it drives me nuts to watch. You know you're going to see, you know, zone left behind the guard, first down, second down, third down, get 8 yards out of it, and then give it to Wisnowski or Hackett last year. And that's it. And that's all you're going to get. But the thing is, it wins games, and it wins them literally every single time. And so my feeling on it is I just wish Coach Witt would stick to his guns and say, hey, you know, I'm not here to give everybody a good time. I'm here to win football games, and that's what this does. I am curious what that feels like, though. Kenneth, what's it like when you go into the second half and every single play call, I mean, sometimes the 70-80% of the play calls are run plays and you're not involved in them. Is it frustrating for you as a player? Do you wish that you were involved in it more, or Do you know that it's going to work, so you kind of let it ride?
Well, initially, when going into the game, we kind of have we figure our game plan out. Like, we know what our game plan is coming into the game, so we already expected, like, during the week, like, what are we going to be running and things like that. And so we already know what's ahead, so we don't really get too hyped up. We don't, like, too riled up, like, oh, we're going to throw 40 times, because it's not going to happen. That's just not our offense, and that's not how we're built. And, you know, as of late, and I've noticed, you know, from looking back at our stuff, on our film and things like that, we're a Big Ten team. Like, the way our team is ran like a Big Ten team. Like, what I mean by that is, like, you're not going to see a lot of a passing. You're going to see the old traditional down, like, hard-nosed running between the guards, probably get a stretch play. And then the passing is really going to be those passing yards just to get you that first down so you can conserve the clock, keep the momentum with you, keep your defense off the field, off the field, you know, so they won't be on the field a long period of time and be gassed and things like that. So our offense approach, you know, as of late, as I look back, you know, I've seen how conservative we were. It was kind of a good thing in a way because we were able to control the game. Because when I look back, if we were sloppy and doing turnovers and stuff like that, we probably wouldn't have won a lot of those games, especially like from the statistics that you said, we probably wouldn't have, you know. And so the conservative approach, you know, when I look at it, we're built like a Big Ten team. You know, we're proud around our offensive alignment, and our offensive alignment is really great at run blocking. And so, and we have, over the years, we were blessed with great running backs, you know, Devontae Booker, John White, you know, the running backs we have this year. You know what I mean? So we try to put our strength towards where our strength is, and our strength is up front, our run blocking, and also the horses we have in the backfield, and we've been able to have quarterbacks in the past that were able to, you know, run, you know. Besides, you know, Jordan Lynn wasn't able to run, but, you know, but like Travis and John Hayes was able to run a little bit, you know what I mean? So we just had – and Kendall Thompson. So, we rode that horse of the run game.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting that you bring it, you say that we're Big Ten offense. I mean, how much do you think – why is it so shotgun predicated, our offense, though? Like, why don't we see more, more of the quarterback under center and a fullback in the backfield and really just, I mean, truly go Big Ten style on them?
I think the reason for that is because – you know, the way we recruited, like initially, like when I was getting recruited, initially we were a spread offense. That's what we were. So all our recruits that we were recruiting, we didn't really recruit fullbacks at all. You know what I mean? So there was no chance of us getting in an I formation, you know what I mean, having fullback sets because we didn't recruit no fullbacks or even people to even fill that role. And so and during these times with all these offensive coordinator changes, we still never – except for Norm Chow. Norm Chow was the only year, I believe it was 2011, that we had a fullback, you know, in our offense. And then we tried to incorporate that in 2012 when Brian Johnson was the OC. And so after that, you know, it fickled a little bit. We went away from it and tried to be more hip and trendy like how the rest of the college football is with all this passing and shotgun and stuff like that. And plus, you know, we utilize our QB more, our mobility of the QB, because now when you're in shotgun, you can utilize zone reads and read options and things like that. And when you're under center, it's kind of hard to do that because you can't. The only really quarterback runs, you probably gonna have a bootleg or things like that, or a quarterback sneak, which I love quarterback sneak from under the center, which I think we should be doing more this year. But, you know, it'll probably come. But that's why I think we haven't really seen a fullback in our offense because we've never recruited a fullback to have to do that. I mean, the only way we'll be able to do that is probably we transform a linebacker into a fullback, like a Marcus Sanders Williams would be probably a good candidate for a fullback.
No, that would be awesome.
The reason that we're – because you fans are often frustrated when it's a goal line or another power run situation. Like, why are we in the shotgun? Why don't we get the ball up closer? It sounds like you're saying the answer to that is because – it gives you options with the quarterback run game so that the defense has to maybe play a little differently and open up some other opportunities for you maybe between the
mm-hmm.
tackles.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I mean, red zone offense is a very interesting topic, especially compared this year compared to last year. And then you have other ways you can grade the offense, like time of possession. I mean, time of possession for Utah is through the roof this year. I mean, they're mm-hmm. obliterating the Pac-12 in time of possession. But, I mean, I'm really interested to hear both of you and kind of how would you grade the offense up to this point?
To be honest with you, I will grade it a B, like an 87%. Like, it could be a B or a B+. The only reason why I don't give it an A is because of the red zone offense. If the red zone offense was great and we get more touchdowns, then I'd be like, okay, this is an A offense for sure. You know, last year what we struggled with was when we got in the lead, we was able to keep it. But when we were behind, it was hard for us to get back up. Like, it was hard for us to get back in the game. So, but this year is totally different. When we're behind, we're able to get back in the game. So, I would grade this year as a B to B plus. You know what I mean? I still wish that red zone scoring would be even greater. What made Travis Wilson so good was that in the red zone, he knew when to take it or when to run with it. I think Troy Williams should use his legs more, to be honest with you, just to pose as a threat to the defense. He may not keep it all the time, but at least pose to the defense as a threat to maybe take it, you know what I mean? So, and as of late, they've been doing that. He's been running a little bit more, but I believe he's not going to sacrifice his body like Travis did because of the limited amount of quarterbacks we have on roster. So I think that our grade for offense is probably a B to a B+. It could be an A, like, you know what I mean, if the red zone scoring was a lot better. So that's my opinion.
All right, Joseph, let's hear it. What's your grade?
Oh, I'd probably say B-. I think that we've been covered up a little bit by being able to get those fourth down conversions. And that's a great thing, and that's awesome to see. But in terms of just a pure efficiency standpoint, the stats that I look at, I'm not seeing a real step forward from the offense from years past. It feels like a step forward when you watch the offense because the passing game is different. When you've got these guys up on the line who are able to really blow it up in a way that wasn't happening in years past.
Mm-hmm.
But the production isn't there. And I kind of give them a pass on it because I think a lot of that is injuries. I think if you really dig into it, the Tim Patrick injury seems to have really thrown off Troy Williams, and there's a difference in the way that he plays when Tim Patrick is on the field, and there's a confidence and an energy to the way that he throws the ball, and I don't know if that's necessarily fair, because I think the guys who are in there right now are just about as good. I mean, Tim Patrick's a special player, but we've got some really good guys in there right now.
Right.
I will tell you what I really liked seeing last week, and help me bump that grade up is Corey Butler-Byrd got 12 touches. I think that if you get him the ball 12 times a game, the Utes are going to keep scoring a lot of points because he's just a nightmare for a defense. His feet are so good, and there's just no way to know which way he's going to come next.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really an interesting situation for me looking at these offense because last year it was just so effective, and it's nice to hear, kind of say it's, you know, there's a part of it that has to be Troy Williams has to – he can't just throw his body into the wind, like, simply because of depth. I mean, it's true. We'd have a true freshman quarterback coming in, as much as I like Huntley. We just do want to protect our quarterback. I mean, for me, personally, you know, it's a solid B. Kenneth, I love that you gave them an 87%. That was awesome. I think it's a solid B as well. I'm not sure where my percentage is. But, you know, one of the things is it is the red zone offense, like you said. My question, you know, and maybe you can address this more than Joseph. Sorry, Joseph. But, you know, Corey Butler-Byrd after the game last week said that, you know, it's not the play calling. The play calls are good play calls. It's that the players aren't executing the play calls appropriately. And I know, you know, film study is probably a little bit different now that you're not with the team. You're not getting all the tapes and everything made for you and watching it on TV. But do you agree with him to some extent that it's more on the execution than the play calling that is causing the red zone woes?
I just want to interject that Kenneth can definitely speak more to that than I can. I don't know X's and O's, and I don't pretend to, so I'm really interested to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, I appreciate that comment, but I believe so. I believe, to be honest with you, because it doesn't matter what play call a coach really dials up, as long as we execute it right. You know what I mean? Like, who would have thought last year that Oregon punt return play, would have scored a touchdown. If you would have drawn it up, I'm like, oh, this is not going to work. But it worked because everybody executed. And that's the same thing I think about our red zone offense. Like you see when we was against Cal, when we threw it to the tight end, you know, that was a player execution problem. It was a great play call, but we just didn't execute it. The last play, if Moss would have followed Isaac Asiata to the right, it would have been a touchdown. It was the right play call, but we just didn't execute it right. And so I believe that's true. They are the right play calls. We just got to do our 111th and execute them. And I believe that once we execute those play calls and do what we have to do, and I think once you get in the red zone, you start to get tenser, and you're like, okay, we got to score. And I believe if they just relax and play like how they've been playing prior to the red zone, just relax and execute their assignments, they'll be more successful in the red zone. Because I feel like once they get in the red zone, they get too tense. They're like, oh, shoot, we're in the red zone. We're like, we got to score. But I feel like if we just relax a little bit, then it will come to us and we'll be able to execute more better.
Yeah, I mean, how important is it that, you know, one of the leaders, one of the captains on the offense, maybe a Troy Williams or someone else, goes up to the guys and be like, hey, guys, just keep playing like we've been to it. Like, do they just need to be hit upside the head by a captain on the offense to really, you know, knock them into that zone where the red zone is the same as anywhere else on the field?
I don't think that it deserves that. I just know, like, when you're going into the huddle, I know Travis a lot used to go into the huddle and be like, all right, guys, let's get this in. We got this. You know, just spraying a little confidence builders, you know what I mean? And then that's what made it like, okay, we're going to get this. Like, you know what I mean? Just relax. We're going to get this. And that's all you have to do. You don't need to be the one to hit somebody and be like, let's go. I'd be all hyped and stuff like that. I just be like, just sprinkle a little confidence to your players. Like, let's go, guys. Let's get this in. We got this. And then, you know, and relax, and everything will come easy.
All right, let me interject that I meant that figuratively, not literally hit them upside the head. But as far as, you know, this is kind of like my last question on red zone offense. And I've seen a little bit of what you've put on Ute Nation about this is I've heard plenty of fans ask, where is the fade route in the red zone? Mm-hmm. Why aren't we throwing fade to some of our big, tall wide receivers? And I'm sure it's just not as easy as saying, all right, let's pick our wide receiver, let's do a fade right and throw it in there.
Well, to be honest with you, I love that play. You see it a lot in the NFL. In the NFL, every time Dez Bryant, Antonio Brown, Odell, when they're isolated one-on-one, you know it's coming. Like Julio Jones, you know it's coming. A fade route's coming. And a lot of the times it works because, look, Tim Patrick, he's 6'5". The tallest corner he's probably going to go against is probably 6 foot. He still has 5 inches on the guy. The same with Raylan, the same with T-Bone. I say we need to utilize their height, you know what I mean, so that we can, you know, at least pose a threat that we're going to pass, you know what I mean, to spread the defense out. The defense is so congested in the middle because we're not threatening them that we're going to throw that fade route or that slant route, you know what I mean? So everybody's puckered in, you know, for that run, you know what I mean? So I believe if we, you know, pose a threat to throw that fade route maybe once, you know, it don't have to be 2-3 times. It can just be one time just so the defense in their head, like, okay, we got to prepare for this too. Because right now we probably only thrown probably 3-4 fade routes within this season. And so defenses know that. They're like, okay, I'm not worried about that fade route because majority of the time they're just going to run. And so I think if we sprinkle a little fade routes here and there in the red zone, that defenses will open up like a little more. They'll spread out a little more, and that's when we're able to get those slant routes or a fade route. Because if you remember in Stanford game, when I had the game winning slant route, the defense was so in the box. Everybody was in the box. And when Christensen called that, we noticed that in the film, and Christensen called that play prior, I'm like, oh, this is a touchdown because everybody's so in the box, and they don't believe that we're going to throw this fade route or this slant route. And as soon as we did it, it was wide open. And so and the same thing as Fresno State game and things like that. So when we utilize those fade routes, it seems to expand the defense instead of keeping them congested in there.
All right. Well, you know, I'm feeling a little offensive overload right now, so I think maybe we should shift the focus to an upcoming game tomorrow, which is the UCLA Bruins. So, you know, Joseph, what are your initial thoughts on this game?
For me, I'm really focused on Josh Rosen and his health. He's playing. Everybody says that he's practicing. My question is he going to be able to throw the deep ball the way that he has been? His arm strength is a defining characteristic for him. And if he's limited to short and intermediate throws, especially with Marcus Williams out, I think that's going to give the Ute defense a big advantage. And the other thing I'm keeping a close eye on is special teams. The punting and the place-kicking game for UCLA has been downright bad. And in a game where I think the Utes are at a disadvantage, we need to see that sort of get get the Utes some free points, either missed field goals or last week UCLA kicked a punt for -1 yards. It went back over the guy's head and out of bounds. If that
and he actually kicked it?
Happened, yeah, he kicked it. It went backwards. It was I don't know if the wind caught it or it went like 6 or 8 yards forward and then bounced backwards, but he kicked it and it went backwards.
Wow.
If that kind of thing could happen, or even just shanks, you know, 10, 15, 20-yard punts that give the Utes the field position they need, because the UCLA defense is a legit unit this year, and I think points are going to be a pretty short supply. So I'm hoping that Rosen is not himself, and if he starts out the game himself, you certainly don't wish an injury on a player, but the Utes do have a tendency to put the quarterback on the ground a lot, and if a guy's not 100%, that can take the wind out of his sails pretty fast. So I'm really looking to see how he handles that first quarter and if he starts to fade. And if that happens, I think the Utes have a good shot to win. If he's 100% and he's throwing the ball down the field with a, you know, dinged up secondary, I think it's going to be a little tough for the Utes to stay in it.
And you know what? I've just changed my opinion of where I'm going to get my MBA. I think UCLA should recruit me to be their punter. I can do
better than -1.
I think I can do better than -1, and I'll take that advanced degree. Thank you. Wow. I'm sorry. That is just still blowing me away. All right, Kev, what do you think?
Looking up a highlight is amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, wow. But all right, Kev, what do you got for us?
Well, I agree with Joseph because, you know, with Josh Rosen being sort of injured and him not being able to throw that deep ball, that's one of our weaknesses this year in on our back end and our secondary. It seems like we've been allowing a lot of deep balls caught on us, and that's not usual for us. But this year, you've been noticing a lot more. So if he's limited to throwing those short intermediate routes because he's injured a little bit, I think it's going to play in our favor because once we get up on the receivers and jam them, our corners are really good at sitting on those routes. And so if he can't throw that deep ball like he usually normally does, then I think it works in our favor, especially with Marcus being out. And so Jordan Fogle, you know, he's a good replacement. I like him as a nickel. He's a great nickel. And it's kind of weird seeing him back there as a free safety because usually he's in Justin Thomas' spot. But I think he's going to do well. I mean, you see it nowadays. Corners are going to safeties as they get older, but like D'Angelo Hall and stuff like that. But I think he'll do well because he's a cover guy. He knows, you know, quarterback eyes and things like that. So I think he's going to do pretty well, especially if we can limit Josh Rosen not doing those deep balls because, you know, our corners are really good at sitting on routes and on the short and intermediate game. The deep ball is what kills us a lot of times because eye placement and not punching our arms through the receiver's hands, that type of thing. And so if we limit that, I think we're going to be really good. We're going to be in a good position because our defensive line is going to get rushed on the QB. Our defensive line is great. And I think we'll be do good if we limit him in that area.
Yeah, I mean, I stutter Stanley here, but it's interesting to me, the big play issue, because everyone I've seen plenty of complaining about big plays, especially over the top of our secondary. But in the end, like, it hasn't cost us a game yet. And maybe I'm just being too much, I'm not worried about it. Like, big plays are going to happen is almost how I feel about it. Sure, they're going to happen, but this defense is just, it's too much of a proven commodity for me to question that the defense isn't going to keep the Utes in every single ball game. Agree or disagree,
right?
Either of you.
Right, right. Yeah,
absolutely.
The defense, I never question the defense at all. Never.
You're right. They're going to happen, and especially the way that the Utes play defense with, you know, oftentimes manned up on the outside, and, you know, they'll just tell Brian Allen or Donald Hatfield, they'll say, hey, there's one of the best receivers in the country. You go cover him. And we'll see you at the fourth quarter. And it works. I mean, you know, sometimes they get their plays, but most of the time that means that there's extra players on the field who are available to make sacks or stop the run or, pick off an errant pass, and I think that makes up for it in the end.
Okay. Well, we don't have too much time left. A few more minutes, so let's get some predictions going. Joseph, I've taken a half-game lead in our standings because, fortunately, you and Amelia were not able to make picks last week, and I was. So we'll start off with you. Let's get your pick, if you want a score prediction, maybe even who you think your game ball is going to go to against UCLA, and we'll follow up with you, Batman.
Okay.
Well, I'm a stats guy mostly, and the stats don't favor the Utes in this game, especially with it being on the road. But I just like the feel of it. I watch UCLA play, and they just don't look like they're that good. And I think Utah's a better team. I think they're going to be healthier. The running back situation seems to have resolved itself with Joe Williams being back. Hopefully Moss will be back. Hopefully Patrick will be more himself. And I just think this is the week the Utes are going to put it together, and I think they're going to come away with a win. Not a lot of points, maybe 20 to 13, but I do think the Utes are going to win this one. And I'll give the game ball to Troy Williams, maybe another one of those game-winning drives there in the fourth quarter.
Oh, all right. So we're all going to be on the edge of our seats at the end of the game. Don't know how I feel about that one, according to you, but all right, Kenneth, what you got?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like it's going to be a close game. My final score, I believe, is going to be like 24-20. I believe that we're going to have to go down like within like the 6-minute range and get a score in, and our defense is going to hold them at the end. That's the way I predict it's going to turn out. It's going to be a close game. We're going to win 24-20. My game ball has to go to I think it's going to go to Joe Williams again, just because if Joe Williams is the start of this game, I think it's going to go to him because we're going to be running the ball, especially against the UCLA's front. So I think if he happens to go ahead and be the starter, I think it's going to go to him.
All right. Well, I'm a little bit more confident than both of you, shocker. I am going with the Utes 24-17. And I'm actually going to go ahead and give the game ball to new starting safety Fogle, even go as crazy to say he's gonna score a touchdown against Mr. Rosen and the UCLA offense. So it's gonna be fun to watch, and when it happens, I expect some thank yous. You know what? I love, and Kenneth, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I have a feeling football players specifically, and especially under Kyle Whittingham, don't mind going into a game as an underdog with something to prove, because it's time to prove something, because I don't think many fans or many people are extremely confident with Utah potentially playing Washington, or not potentially, they will play Washington next week, and I don't think there's a lot of confidence. And I think this team wants to prove to everybody that it's time for game day to come to town and everyone to watch this Utah team do something.
Right, right, yeah.
So
we love the title of being an underdog. It's the greatest. And I think that once we get this win against UCLA, it'll give us more of a confidence boost to head to Washington game and pull out that W.
Might be a little like that Oregon game last year, going in as underdogs despite the good record and the good ranking and showing everybody what Utah football is all about, huh?
Right.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for coming on. Really enjoyed having you on, Kenneth. Love to have you on again. You're welcome back whenever you want. You just tell me. And we will see it. We will talk to everyone late next week. Next episode will come up early next week, all about UCLA with Andy and Patrick. So catch that episode then. And go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to U Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Find us on Twitter @UTalkPodcast or email @UTalk@gmail.com.